All right, dear brethren, thank you very much. Yes, yeah, so we thank Elohim, our Creator, for opportunities like this to get together, to serve Him as we prayed last night during our prayer time. And as we've been praying lately, is for unity. We see that the people of Elohim have been scattered all across the United States, all across the world, on account of errors that have crept in, and errors on the part of the congregations too, for allowing themselves to be scattered, because we should have never allowed ourselves to be scattered. But it happened, and not just scattered physically, of course. I'm speaking about in doctrine. We have all these different groups, and when I say different groups, I mean with different names, different ideologies, different leaders, different goals, so that the congregations, those who are seeking to serve Elohim, find it hard to do so, because all our efforts are not coordinating. Are not coordinated. While one is trying to cool things down, another is heating things up. You know, I'm speaking allegorically. While other is lifting, another is bringing down. And yes, there are times that we need to heat things up. There are times we need to calm things down. There are times we need to lift things up and bring things down. But it needs to be done in a concerted, coordinated effort. If we're all doing it all at different times, we are undoing what we are doing. And this is exactly what we see happening. Because you can have one group speaking about one thing and another speaking about one thing, while we should have a concerted effort. And that's what we've been seeing in the book of Acts. That everything is done in coordination. Elohim times everything to happen about the same time, even all across the world. He doesn't do it where things are done at conflicting times, so to say. Like, we even saw that early on when we saw the congregation in under the persecution, for under their first persecution before Paul became an apostle. He was brutally persecuting them. We saw that they were scattered, but in being scattered, Elohim had them proclaim the message wherever they went. And prior to that time, they were not teaching the other nations. It was all focused on Israelites or Jews, right? But then we noticed that Peter was instructed, then we saw Peter about that was instructed to preach to the Gentiles. And at the same time, we saw that those who were scattered all over were also doing the same thing, that the Spirit of Elohim moved so that while in Jerusalem, Peter would be addressing Gentile people, likewise those who were scattered were moved by the Spirit to do the same. And so we see from the Scriptures that Elohim does things in a coordinated effort. Even time of Moses complaining that he couldn't speak. At the same time, Elohim had already coordinated for Aaron to be coming his way. You understand that? So, but what do we see today? We see that we've fallen prey to Satan's devices to divide and conquer. And as we know, like our great Messiah said, a kingdom divided against itself cannot stand. And we have become, so to say, divided against ourselves. But it's high time that we reverse that. It's high time that we come together. It's high time that we do all we can to reach out to those around us of like mind. We don't have to understand things exactly the same. Elohim will take care of that. What we need to have is the principal doctrines of faith in the Father, the Son, the Spirit, and that Yeshua is the Son of Elohim, and that He died and for our sins and rose from the dead on our behalf. Those core things, the things, and that we are to obey His commandments, have that mindset. Now, what that means to obey His commandments is sometimes where we get differences of ideas. However, in the bond of peace, if we adhere, if we listen to Elohim's command to stay united, to Yeshua's prayer to stay united, He will take care of the differences of opinion if we let His love, His peace reign in our hearts. We will be able to discuss things that we have different understandings about. And if we have an impasse, then we know we need to pray. We don't divide over it. differences of opinion are things that we are praying, that are there for us to pray about, never to divide about. That's the trick of the adversary. Oh, you don't agree with me? Okay, you go your way, I'll go. No, the congregation of Elohim does not do that. Never did was that a doctrine. If it happened, it was by error, but never the intent of Elohim, as we even saw in the matter, as I've referenced a few times in the past, again, with Moses, when the people were about to be divided after the matter of the golden calf. They were, one group wanted to go one way and so on. They did not want to stay with the group heading for the towards the promised land, but Elohim did not allow that. It was brutal what happened in the end, but it shows us that that's far from Elohim's mind, that we should divide over anything. And even when a brother or sister comes with false doctrines, we lovingly and patiently try to show the truth without becoming contentious and arguing, and that brother or sister will eventually leave. You understand? So that's where we are today, and that's kind of why we need to really do all we can to work together, especially those of us in local states, brothers and sisters in our local community, so we can serve together. Okay? So let's continue with Acts chapter 17. And Brother Okosa read for us last Sabbath verses 1 through 7, I believe. And not to restate everything our brother said, but Brother Okosa showed us some principles of evangelization principles for evangelization through this chapter. So he covered how discipleship is important. In other words, that we don't just hand a tract to a person and then walk away, or speak to the person one word and then leave the person. But actually, we need to do as much as the person is willing to or able to bear, disciple that brother or sister. That means by our regular interactive teachings, through our words, and of course through our actions. Okay, and there were other things that our brother said, and once we have that posted on the website, you could go and listen to it as well. And also, there's a link on there of Brother Okosa's blog, where he covers a lot of things as well. So let me reread this, since we have brethren who weren't with us last Sabbath. It says in Acts chapter 17, verses 1 through 7, "Now when they had passed through Amphipolis and Apollonia, they came to Thessalonica, where was a synagogue of the Jews. And Paul, as his manner was, went in unto them, and three Sabbath days reasoned with them out of the Scriptures, opening and alleging that Messiah must needs have suffered and risen again from the dead, and that this Yeshua, whom I preach unto you, is Messiah, the elect one," or the elect one, right? Verse 4, "And some of them believed and consorted with Paul and Silas, and of the devout Greeks a great multitude, and of the chief women not a few. But the Jews which believed not, moved with envy, took unto them certain lewd fellows of the baser sort, and gathered a company, and set all the city on an uproar, and assaulted the house of Jason, and sought to bring them out to the people. And when they found them not, they drew Jason and certain brethren unto the rulers of the city, crying, These that have turned the world upside down are come hither also, whom Jason hath received. And these all do contrary to the decrees of Caesar, saying that there is another king, one Yeshua." Okay? So, briefly, so we know they just, in the prior chapter, we saw how Paul and Silas completed their mission after being beaten. They baptized a jailer with all his family, He defended the cause of the believers, as shown in verse 37, by insisting that those who falsely accused and unjustly punished them should come out publicly and bring them out to by their actions, state before all, so that their actions of these leaders may show that the believers are blameless and should be left alone, basically. So by him doing what he did in verse 37 of Acts chapter 16, he set in place a defense for the whole congregation, not just for himself. And then he returned to Lydia, to the house of Lydia, whom they had baptized earlier on. And from there, they went through these regions in that location. Yes, the city of Thyatira, as stated in verse 14 of chapter 16. So these regions, they went there, and they came to Thessalonica, where there was a synagogue of the Jews. Briefly, this is kind of trivial, but when I used to hear the word synagogue as a child, I thought it was a Jewish word. I thought it was a Hebrew word, but it's not. It's actually a Greek word, which means assembling. Right? But often we hear synagogue. Of course, the word, the Jewish word for synagogue, Hebrew word, modern Hebrew, is shul, not synagogue. But synagogue is a Greek word. So it's a synagogue, an assembling of the Jews there. And this was his custom. As it says, it was his manner. He went to the synagogue as his manner was. So wherever there was a synagogue, as long as he was welcomed, he would go there. And he reasoned with them 3 Sabbath days. This is stating for us that it may not seem clearly to some, but it is really clearly for those who study this, the scriptures and the history of the congregation, that the fact that it says he reasoned with them 3 Sabbath days, that is because the Sabbath was recognized by the early Gentile non-Jewish believers. The writings of Irenaeus, Tertullian, and Polycarp and others attest to that as well. But 3 Sabbaths, he reasoned with them out of the scriptures. He reasoned with them out of the scriptures because they were Yehudim, they were Jews. They were blessed to have the scriptures and have a level of faith in the scriptures. So Paul was able to reason with them directly out of the scriptures. That's something to keep in mind. Not everyone knows the scriptures. If we're teaching, as our brother was teaching on evangelization a little bit last Sabbath, we have to keep that in mind, that it's useless to talk to it's almost useless to talk to someone who doesn't know the scriptures about the scriptures. Even though it's wise to allude to principles from the scriptures, but if somebody doesn't believe in the scriptures, it's useless to do that. It really is. This is why Elohim also gives us nature to go by. And if we pay attention to the operation of his hands or the works of his hands, in other words, his distinct signature in nature, then we will be able to teach people who don't believe in the scriptures about Elohim. And once they come to believe in that Elohim, who is the first reality over all things, which is what it will boil down to, that he is the first reality who alone has no beginning and exists without end, that's the point. All non-believers who don't believe in the scriptures need to realize, atheists, then they can come to believe in Elohim. Then from that point on, they can come to start reasoning, okay, of all the religions, which religion best reflects this Elohim that I evidently see in the works of nature? See, that's how it's done. It's knowing Elohim first, then the scriptures. Really, if we look carefully, we will find that there are times we try to believe the scriptures, but if it came down to it, Elohim helped us to believe in him. Then after we believe in him, we were better able to believe the scriptures. So they reason with the Yehudim, with the scriptures, because they already believed in the scriptures. And so he opening and alleging, so he was introducing, he was bringing forth and stating. He makes a point and he is stating, he's explaining it, and then he demonstrates it. See? He's states it and demonstrates it. So he goes through all proofs and nuances of the proofs to show by direct and indirect and by inference in every way possible how Messiah needed to suffer, that it was absolute. So he went through the scriptures to show that Messiah was not just coming to reign as many of them thought, but he was coming, he had to first die. That wasn't well known among many of the Yehudim, especially those of the Pharisaic sect, and Sadducees as well. So he had to make that point. And once he made that point, and also that he had to rise from the dead. And once he showed that, okay, according to the scriptures, whoever Messiah is, he had to suffer, he had to die, and he would rise from the dead. After he made that scriptural point, then he said, that the one you know as Yeshua, that's the Messiah. So that's the process he took. He reasoned with them with the scriptures. He explained and he demonstrated. It's very interesting. I find that he explained and demonstrated. So we have to keep that in mind. Okay? Now when we ourselves, we're not Paul. We're not necessarily blessed like Paul to have the wisdom and the experiences he had and the gifts he had. But in every little way we can, when we're teaching, we must apply that principle in our teaching to others. We explain and then we demonstrate. And that's the approach I try to take myself when I teach. I don't just teach what something is. I also like to teach how it cannot be anything else. See, so that's my demonstration. I will also try to go and show why it can't be A, it can't be B, D, it can't be F, it must be E, right? So that's how when we're teaching, we need to explain what we're doing and we have to demonstrate. So, and then he says, this is the Yeshua I'm preaching to you. And what happened? Some believed, some of the Jews, some of the Yehudim believed, wonderful, in a Gentile land believed, and they consorted with Paul, right? They were persuaded to join, they were convinced to join with Paul and Silas, and of the Greeks, a great multitude believe. We could understand that. It's a foreign land, it's a place where there are predominantly Greeks, so more Greeks believed in that region than the few Jews that were there. That's understandable. A great multitude, and of the chief women, not a few. So that means there were many of the highly recognized women who were convinced. That's something we must pray, that when we're teaching and explaining and demonstrating, that we can get people of high standing. We need to pray. Why? We need to pray that Elohim will touch the hearts of people in high places. If you notice, this has happened a few places. Lydia was one such person. Lydia, she was a high standing person. It is because a person that's already well known, when they come to faith, they will have a great impact on many, because they have, you could say, like we said, many followers, so to say. So it's a strategic way the Spirit works with those who are of the faith to reach many at one time. You understand? That's why Paul says when he does not fight as if he's quote unquote beating the air, right? He fights strategically. He works in a very strategic way. And we, as small as we are in number, we must practice that too. Work strategically, pray strategically, pray for the courage and faith to reach out to people in high standing. We'll probably get a lot of rejections. But we must not think like that. If we're rejected by those who are not receiving the word. But let's pray that, because Elohim is touching the hearts of all, in all levels, rich and poor, known and unknown. So let's pray that some of our work can reach those that are in high standing so they can have an impact on many. So in verse, but the Jews which believed not, so those that did not believe, moved with envy. Again, we see that over and over and over. Whenever the Yehudim who did not believe, there was always a matter of envy
in them and took certain lewd fellows of the baser sort and gathered. So they did not, quote unquote, dirty their hands in this. They took people that were lewd, evil, right? Evil men, evil people to do the dirty work for them while they stood in the background, you know, as if they're innocent. So they took these guys, these evil people, and gathered a company, a crowd, and set the whole city on an uproar. And they attacked the house of Jason and sought to bring them out to the people. So they did not find the disciples, Paul and Silas, but they took Jason and cried. See, they're really causing an uproar. And we see this today. Of all the evil things, some of the evil ideologies going around today, to murder are the most innocent of in our society, the unborn, right? The anger, the total wrath and uproar and mob crowd mentality, just so to convince many to allow the murder of innocent unborn children. Some do the same to allow the perversion of the young minds. You will see that there's this crowd mentality where a whole crowd is lied to, where there's a little bit of truth, coupled with a lot of lies to achieve evil purposes. But we must take the stance on our knees before Elohim and cry out against these things. He will hear our prayer. So, in our own time. So they got this crowd turning the city upside down, and they say, these have turned the world upside down, and they, whom Jason received. So they're putting the blame on Jason. That Jason is the person who received these people in their homes, and account of him, these all do contrary to the decrees of Caesar, saying that there is another king, one Yeshua. And most likely they did not even mention the name of Caesar in their teaching at all, but rather they were just proclaiming Yeshua. But they added that part about Caesar as if the disciples were attacking Caesar, which we know they did not, which we know even Messiah, who could have easily done that, never did that. The apostles never did that. And that's a lesson for us too, that while we are standing against evil governments, we must be careful not to follow the mob mentality of people who are against, of secular people who are against what a government is doing, and speak in an unrespectful way towards or against an official, an elected official. We believers, we must not do that. We must rather go to our Elohim in Yeshua's name by the Spirit and pray to him to intervene, and we live by being a light, and we try to lovingly explain and demonstrate the faith to others. We will have more success that way. We must not speak against the rulers of this world as the secular people of this world do. So they trouble the people. I'm sorry, saying that there is one king, one Yeshua. So that's what they're accusing Jason about and the disciples of doing. So this mob mentality. So we see how through the works of Elohim, as we serve Elohim, how we can expect people to receive us. It should not be where we expect people to reject us all the time. If people are rejecting us all the time, we can be sure there's something that we're disconnected with, and we need to reevaluate what we're doing, how we're doing it, and go before Elohim for direction. Remember Joshua? That's what he did in the matter of Achan, when Achan took of the gold of the whatever items that were to be devoted to destruction. He took them into their tent. And what happened? All of a sudden the Israelites were losing the battle. What did Joshua do? Joshua fell on his face before Elohim, right? And he cried, why, what's going on? And Elohim says, get up, there is sin in the camp. So why was there failure? There was something wrong in the midst of Israel, in the congregation of Israel. So in other words, Joshua, don't call out to me. If you're failing, know for sure there's something wrong in your camp. That was the message there. Because he said, why do you cry to me, Joshua? Get up. There's sin in the, there's uncleanness. There's something wrong in the camp. Address it. Then everything will go well. So we need to do the same with ourselves and collectively. When we see we're failing, we need to humbly evaluate ourselves and ask Elohim for guidance to reveal to us what is wrong, for he will not fail. So we can anticipate that if we come to the point where we're doing things right, we will see that success that Elohim describes for us here throughout, from chapter 1 of Acts all the way through where we are now in chapter 17. Let's read a little bit more and then I'll close. So verses 8 says, and they troubled the people and the rulers of the city when they heard these things. And when they had taken security of Jason and of the other, they let them go. So here they trouble the rulers. So they brought an accusation before the rulers of the city, and the rulers were troubled by all of this. What is all this about, you know? And what happened? And when they had taken security of Jason and of the other, they let them go. So they took some sort of money, whatever it was, some sort of payment from them, and they released them. Verse 10, and the brethren immediately sent away Paul and Silas by night unto Berea, who coming further went into the synagogue of the Yehudim. Again, see that? Remember, dear brethren, those of us who have been in this study since chapter 1 of Acts, we saw over and over how no matter what happens, wherever the disciples went, the first place they went was the synagogue. If we were meeting in person, I would ask everyone to shout, say, the synagogue, because that's always what they did. Now, why am I making that point? It's because there are many people who would take the earliest portion of the scriptures where it mentions, and we will go to the Gentiles, to say that the believers abandoned the Yehudim. No, again, that's not the case. They abandoned the Yehudim that reject them. They never abandoned the Yehudim as a whole. They're just following what Messiah had instructed them, that if whosoever house you go to, whoever you go to, if they reject your message, shake the dust of your sandals against them as a testimony against them, right? So they're not rejecting a faith or the Jewish people, only those who rejected them. For obviously, there were Jews, and many Jews in every time they went to the synagogues, the very synagogues they went to, there were always Jews who joined in the faith. And every time, there were also those who rejected them, and when they rejected them, they moved on from them. But as we saw here, they left those Jews that caused this uproar, but they're in Berea, and what do? They go to a shul, they go to a synagogue of the Yehudim again. So these were more noble than those in Thessalonica, and that they received the word with all readiness of mind and searched the scriptures daily whether those things were so. So we saw in verse 2 of 17 how it says Paul reasoned with them from the scriptures, and that's what they did here too. And these were more noble, and they searched the scriptures daily whether those things were so. All right? So, and therefore many of them believe also of honorable women, which were Greeks, and of men, not a few. That's interesting. So here, again, it specifies that the honorable women, which were Greeks, and of men, not a few. So many of the high-standing or honorable women, in this case men, believed as well. While in this verse 4, said mention only the women, and I wonder if there were no men believers there. I'm not sure. But here it specifies that both male and female among the Greeks believe. So here in Berea, there was something about their setting which allowed them to be more noble. And I will cover a little bit of that next time we talk. And I could give you a heads up. We will see a contrast between how the disciples deal with the Jews and with the Greeks later on. See, here they went to the synagogue. They went to the synagogue. Synagogue of Thessalonica, Jews, went to the synagogue in Berea, Jews, scriptures. We will see now, next Sabbath, the eternal permitting, when we continue with the verse, how Paul takes another approach, as I've alluded to earlier, on how he's going to speak with the Gentiles when he meets the Gentiles. And that's to be a lesson in how we are to deal with people too. So in brief, in summary, what we saw to end, we saw how the disciples went to Thessalonica. They were well received by a few Jews and by many women Greeks of high standing. The unbelieving Jews were moved by envy as and caused an uproar, turned the whole city against them, particularly one Jason who invited them into their home, who received them. But then in the end, Jason, thanks to Elohim, was released, and Paul and the disciples went to Berea and were well received there by both Jews and Gentiles. So again, when we're teaching from the scriptures, we see we must explain the scriptures. We see Messiah did that all the time. He first began to do and to teach. The scriptures spoke of Messiah. He began to do and to teach. Do is the action which explains what he's doing. The teaching is the further explanation of what's being done. So we need to explain and demonstrate it from the scriptures by our actions. We also saw Philip did the same thing with the Ethiopian before baptizing. He explained to him the scriptures from where the Ethiopian was reading somewhere in Isaiah, and then the Ethiopian was believed and eventually was baptized. So remember, friends, as we're sharing the word with others, we must be prayerful, study the word, and be ready to explain and demonstrate what we are doing. Thank you for listening, brethren.
Okay, thank you, Brother Jackson.